Thanks for continuing on with us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. The budget is just a few days away. Many is already speculating that the GST might not be in it, but we don't know for sure. We're also anticipating the kind of announcements that is going to be bringing this Madani government into the frame, because after all, this is the first year that the budget will be presented in full. They have the full control of the budget, not just for this year, but next year as well. So a lot is in store for us to explore. Joining us in the studio is Farah Rosli, the Malaysia tax leader of EY. Farah, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us. It's been some time since we last spoke. Maybe I want to do a quick sanity check or health check in terms of how EY is going to view this budget, considering that it's going to be the first Madani budget in full, in totality, as compared to what was presented in February this year. What would be some of the highlights that you want to look at when it comes to this budget?
So looking at budget this year, I think the expectation would be a comprehensive budget that covers the entire society. I think that would be the expectation, ranging from businesses right to the men on the street, right? With the issue, with geopolitical changes that's coming, socio-economy issue, rising costs of living, businesses coming out of the pandemic. It's still somehow some sort of a pandemic somewhere, because we still have the threat of COVID-19 is still there. And businesses, some are doing better, some are still, you know, picking up the pieces from the previous lockdown that we've had. So there are different phases where businesses are opening up, and coupled with whatever that's happening in the region, globally, geopolitical instability, the war that's just started, which is really, really unfortunate.
You're talking about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict,
which is really, really unfortunate. And that would have an impact on supplies, demands. And then when it comes down to the people on the street, what is it in for me, right? There will be that question, right? Would there be incentive to support individual? I don't think there's going to be, hopefully not, any increase in taxes. Rather, the tax may stay, but there may be introduction of new taxes, because in Budget 2023, it was mentioned that capital gains tax and luxury goods tax will be introduced. So there will be, I would expect, some refinement and some more updates on what would be the details encompassing in both capital gains tax as well as luxury goods tax. But the hope is then that there would not be any effect, unintended outcome from that. You know, at the end of the day, it should be supporting of the growth of the economy, supportive of businesses so that businesses continue to flourish and will be able to employ people with the right skills and therefore contribute back the profitability in the form of taxes. So it's not just a tax as a means, but, you know, businesses continue to grow, and with that, people are unemployed, and the tax will be collected anyway at the end.
Let's talk about the unintended consequences of some possibilities of new taxes being introduced. Luxury goods tax is one of them that may have unintended consequences. If luxury goods are more expensive here compared to our peers, foreign money, direct money coming in from travellers or tourists would be impacted. Yeah. And this would scare off the possibility of them spending, not just on luxury goods tax, but generally spending outright.
Yeah.
Do you feel that that is one area of unintended consequences that the government is to address?
Yeah, that could be it. Because if you look at the flow of tourists, it's not just to purchase the goods, right? They will be using the system, I mean, whatever facility,
hospitality, transport, hotels,
I mean, even hospitals, transportation, they'll be consuming food and beverages, and then they will be buying items. And Malaysia is known to be a shopping heaven, right? And we don't have GST, so there's no additional tax on those goods, although GST comes with an input tax mechanism whereby the buyers would be able to claim back the tax imposed on the goods. If they are tourists and they bring the goods back, they would be able to claim back. But with the luxury goods tax, hopefully some sort of mechanism like that will also be included. So therefore, if those goods are being purchased and it's for the tourists and they go out, there would be some form of input tax or a refund mechanism whereby that those taxes can be claimed back as they exit the country, right?
You're speaking in terms of the GST going to be introduced. Let's get a position on that, or your wise position.
Not GST,
that.
But probably that is the form of luxury goods tax. I don't think GST will be introduced. Maybe it's a matter of time. before GST can be introduced.
Or it's going to be introduced in different fashion, maybe even a VAT.
VAT would be GST in a sense, right? But luxury goods tax, the one that we spoke earlier, is a form of tax that will be imposed on specific goods, whilst GST.
And then, of course, the threshold is there.
Yes.
Which is another element of how we want to increase the brand equity of our local brands, because if it's important for them to be branded as a luxury good, they wouldn't do so now because it would be a higher price tag on their consumers.
Yes.
Okay. Another unintended consequence that we need to look at is, of course, capital gains tax, because folks like me, we intend to invest and have been investing and, quite frankly, have not been taxed on our capital for the longest of time, in fact, ever. Now, we might have that whole idea of our capital being taxed, resulting in a possible capital flight.
Yeah.
And when you compound this with the, you know, I guess the investment community, it could run into the billions just to avoid taxes, i.e. CGT. Does this factor in terms of how EY is going to look at the impact of capital gains tax being implemented? Yeah.
So, interesting enough, our tax system tax on income. So, anything to do with capital gains will not be taxed. So, if you are an employee, you get your salary as a form of income, you will pay tax on that. I mean, provided that you meet the threshold and all that. Whilst capital gains other than property, right? If you sell your house, for example, or you have shares of real property company, that will be subject to real property gains tax. So other than that, we don't have any tax. Currently, we don't have any tax on capital gains. So the intended announcement that capital gains tax will be introduced, that would be in a way impacting those who buy shares, not for buying and selling. If they buy and sell, that is an income to them. They would have paid tax, so no difference. But these are investors who comes by tax. Say, for example, you acquire shares, you keep it for 5 years, you sell, you gain capital, you have a capital gain, so that will not be brought to tax, right? But with the now with the announcement of a potential capital gains tax, which is under study now, those kind of transactions likely will be subject to capital gains, right? So the main thing is then that it was also mentioned and that if it's shares of listed company, it will not be subject to. There will be some form of exemption given for those kind of shares of a listed company. But private company shares, right? So see, if I buy a share of a company who's a private company, Sdn Bhd, for example, and I keep that for 5 years, I sell and there's capital gains, then I end up having to pay taxes on that. So the question here is then that would that spook investors? Would that mean then that investor will look at it and say then that, hey, my cost of investment, the gain I'm getting will be lesser because there's a tax now on it. So if we are looking at encouraging growth of a lot of private companies, then maybe there should be consideration, you know, what is the policy of the country if you want to encourage growth of entrepreneurs, for example, and they have private companies and they would like to open up those shares to new shareholders to buy those shares. And if those shares are subject to capital gains, it may render those companies or those shares of those companies to be less attractive because of the new capital gains that's coming. But then again, we look at whether there would be a mechanism to provide reliefs, tax reliefs or exemption, so that those kind of transactions where it's supposed to be encouraging the growth of the economy, we want to encourage those kind of transactions to happen, those kind of transactions are given in a way exemptions or reliefs. One example is mergers and acquisition. Currently, there is a relief provided that you meet all the conditions. If it's for efficiency of the group, for example, and they are actually doing restructuring of the group, there is an exemption on stamp duty. Even real property gains tax on real property company shares. So there's exemption. So if there is such mechanism to allow relief or exemption on certain transactions that is needed for the growth of the economy or to support the growth of the businesses, then I think that should be welcome and that should be thought of.
One area of concern is the Minister of Economy, Rafizi Ramli, says that they're looking at creating 5,000 startups by 2025. i.e. 2,500 startups next year, 2,500 startups the year after that.
Yeah.
And the only way startups can grow is getting through private investment funds, i.e. mostly through VCs, but hopefully when they enter growth stage, private equity as well. And the transaction of ownership between these capital owners or VCs and PEs are going to exchange dramatically as the company grows. But if there's a tax or toll that has to be paid for every single growth stage, that will definitely dissuade the VCs from coming in. Is this an area of concern for you? Because on one hand, they want to grow the tech sector. On the other hand, we're going to get taxed all the way, along the way.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe as a mechanism, just for our discussion's sake, there are sectors. If you look at the National Industrial Master Plan that was just announced by PM, there are 21 sectors that, you know, the government's looking at to support, to encourage, you know, area of focus, right? Of course, the other sectors will also be looked at, but this is the 21 focus sectors, right? Pharmaceutical, digital, can't remember, they were medical devices, right? They were all these 21 sectors. So perhaps one way to look at it is, if there are such capital gains tax, right, and those deals or those transactions are to do with these sectors that is specific, that's needed for the country, then maybe certain exemptions or reliefs can be provided then that it meets to the purpose. What would be the benefit to the country? I think we need to measure that, because otherwise you're looking at a disparity of treatment between one sector to the other sector. So if those sectors are the sectors that we want to look at and to encourage, right, and according to the NIMP, 21 sectors have been identified, and if there are such investors who want to come in and invest in those sectors, and those sectors are the sectors that is actually being looked at, being encouraged by the government, then perhaps there could be some reliefs available. Already there are stamp duty reliefs provided, and, you know, for example, for purchase of properties, for purchase of, for stocks, you know, for shares, right? So there are such. So they can be mechanism. It's not to say then that the new tax that's going to be introduced would dampen the economy. But what I'm saying is then that, number one, the unintended outcome. If that's not the intended outcome, we don't want a negative effect. You know, we want to achieve higher tax collection, we want to achieve economic growth. But if that tax is going to spook or, you know, cause negative impact, then that's something that needs to be looked at. And the second thing is then that if those are the sectors that we are looking at encouraging, and those are the kind of transactions that's needed for the country, then there are exemption or relief routes that's available, but the conditions needs to be clear.
Another area of exploration that I want to go through with you is on the principles of having these new taxes in place versus the quantum that needs to be achieved.
Yeah.
If you look at the quantum, GST would be the way to go. They've collected 44 billion the last time. They've collected 33 plus billion through SST. That is the easiest way for us to look at consumption tax in terms of revenue. Of course, income tax is a different story altogether. If you look at all these other taxes in terms of CGT or luxury tax or even inheritance tax, wealth tax, those kind of stuff, how much can the government collect anyway? So this is an idea of whether the government is trying to pursue the principles of it, i.e. if you are owners of capital, you have to be taxed in this country the way you are being taxed in other countries. Do you think that that is the idea of the government trying to pursue this angle? In fact, they say that they want to focus on sustainable development and inclusive growth. The second part, inclusive growth. Is this the part where they're trying to pursue principles instead of just the quantum?
Good question. Of course, if you are able to widen the tax, that's always the most ideal situation.
Every year I talk about the narrow tax base.
Yes, because we have a very narrow tax base. We are taxing on income, while GST tax on what NIM calls goods and services.
Mm.
So whenever you consume, you get tax on it, right? And it's not a tax on tax.
Yeah,
because you know the businesses are able to claim back input tax, so there's no cascading effect.
Mm.
That's the beauty of GST. So we went back to SST now, or SST 2.0, and when we were on the GST regime, we had I can't remember the exact number, but close to 500,000 GST registered taxpayers.
Okay.
When we went back to SST, our registered taxpayers, take a guess.
I don't know.
Less than 100,000, right?
Of course.
Yeah, less than 100,000, because SST is just taxing on certain type of services.
Yes.
Of course, we have the sales tax, and then we have the service tax. And that service and there's no tax on goods anymore, tax on services, and only certain type of services which falls within the bracket, which falls within the Service Tax Act. E-invoicing is, in a way, of course, that would mean then that we would be able to pick up all those taxes or taxpayers into the tax bracket, right? Because everybody would now issue e-invoice and everything will be recorded and included in the database. There will be all data captured by the Inland Revenue Board. But at the same time, e-invoice is also a move towards digitalizing the tax administration, and you know, and that would mean then that you don't need to keep hard copies. You know, everything is systemized, is all in the system. Even if you lose an invoice, you can still claim the tax deduction. No more disputes, you know, in terms of how much are you claiming for an individual. We're claiming for books, for example, 1,000 ringgit, it's all in that invoice, right? And you can't say then that I cannot provide my invoice now and therefore I just want to claim the whole 1,000 ringgit. So it's supposed to be, yes, widen the tax bracket, but also moving towards digitalization and simplifying and creating efficiency for the future. Of course, all this output, all this outcome, all this efficiency and all that will only be achieved maybe in a year, 2-3 years down the road when the system becomes more mature, right? But there's a little bit of change management, people are getting used, there will be concerns, do I need to spend more now? Do I have to have a person now just recording my invoices, right? It's a little bit of change management to businesses as well and to individuals as well, because if I go out and I want to claim a deduction on my medical expenses, I pay for my parents, I get the tax deduction, I need to make sure that hospital issue me an invoice. Otherwise, I will not be able to claim a tax deduction on my own personal tax. So a little bit of change management is needed, but e-invoice will eventually help us to achieve, you know, the I would say three outcomes. One is including more people into the tax bracket. Number two, achieve, of course, that digitalization journey for businesses, for the tax administrators,
and for
the individuals as well. And the third, achieve efficiency at the end of the day, because everything is systemized. You don't
in
need to
time.
Keep in real time. Like I used to keep all my receipts in a box.
At the end of the year. I still do that.
So now no point keeping all those invoices because you need an e-invoice to claim for those.
That's where the introduction of the e-invoice is going to be done in tiered bracket. First, we're looking at large companies and then mid-sized companies and then of course the small mid-sized companies, which brings you to the focus of how will this budget impact the SMEs and micro SMEs. More than 90% of the enterprises and companies in this country is in that bracket and they need that all the help they can get. We've spoken a lot about the kind of taxation that is going to be brought into the picture. How do you think this budget is going to be approached if you are a business owner, especially if you have, let's say, 5 employees or less, or 10 employees or less?
For the SMEs, micro SMEs especially, I think the main focus for businesses, and always when I speak to them, I have a lot of respect towards entrepreneurs, right? Because they have to think of everything. And the main focus would be to ensure then that they stay afloat, cash flow, is of essence. So if you think about the kind of support that's needed, is probably in a form of incentive to support them to be able to train the right skills that's needed for the industry, right? And the other bit is also in terms of, if we are talking about, and you mentioned earlier, sustainability, right? We're talking about sustainability agenda going green, right? And if 97% of the businesses are SMEs, and if you want to encourage them to go on a sustainability agenda when their focus is actually to ensure that their business stay afloat and they continue to be able to actually run the business and continue to survive with all this competition, with all the you know, the forces that's actually challenging businesses on a day-to-day basis, if we want to encourage them to get into a sustainability agenda, then I would think some form of support or incentives to encourage them to adopt green initiatives, right? I mentioned earlier, train or skill workforce, especially in this era, right? If they need to move towards digitalization because of e-invoice, you know, perhaps some form of deductions as given for the cost of actually transiting into e-invoice, at least in the at the beginning. I'm not saying forever, you need to provide them support, right? Because there will be a time where you can't continuously provide all this incentive and all these grants to businesses, but at least at the onset, at the time when things are changed, change management is always the most difficult, and trying to transition into a new requirements will probably you know, need a lot of effort and a lot of energy, especially if it's a SME we're talking about. So deductions, cost of actually acquiring systems or softwares, maybe an accelerated depreciation, tax depreciation or accelerated allowance in a form, because those costs should be deductible anyway.
Yes.
But maybe in a form of acceleration, accelerated or double deduction.
So basically the tax identification, the tax liability identification can be done quicker.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, finally, the area that I need to talk about that will impact all of us, because all of us are earning an income somewhere, is in terms of taking our annual income tax at a, I guess, version 3.0, I suppose. When you have a tax bill, the way we saw prior to 1999, you know, every year you get a tax bill and you succumb to it, or a self-declaration of what we need to do for the past, I don't know, two decades, a little over two decades on self-declaration.
Yeah.
How do you think income tax will be done in the near future? Income tax 3.0, so to speak.
Yeah.
Will we get a tax liability bill straight up?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is there, and then maybe there's a dispute or two, or a relief or two that I want to claim. But basically, everything is done, and I thank LHDN for such a bill, and then off I go, and then everything I forget about it, and then everything's been done PCB wise. Or are we still going to do the way we have been doing for the past two decades? How do you think this will be approached?
I like that question. You're very learned on tax.
Thank you very much. Kena lah kalau tak bayar lebih kan.
Yeah, because you know, when we first, two decades ago, you spoke about two decades ago, right? When we were, you know, younger days.
When we were younger, when I still had hair, yes. I still grieve over the loss of my hair.
That would be the official assessment system, whereby you just submit your tax returns, the IRB, the Revenue Board will sit behind the desk, they assess your tax, and then they will ask, you know, is this your claim? Provide supporting documentation. If you're happy with it, IRB is happy with it, they issue an assessment. You pay your taxes. So that is official assessment system. That was two decades ago. In 2001 for businesses and 2004 for individuals, or maybe I got it the other way around, that time, the government introduced, and it's just like this budget that we're talking about. Now we talk about e-invoicing, but at that time they said we're going to go on self-assessment system. So everybody was like, hey, what is this self-assessment? So what it means is then, which is the current system that we're having now, is then that you submit your tax return, you go to your borang, your form in the IRB portal. Whether you're a company, you have your form C, individual, you have a form B. If you're an entrepreneur, a businessman, self-employed, you know, sole prop, then you have your E form BE or whatever form that there is. You do your tax return, you submit to the IRB, it's deemed assessed. So what you declare is regarded as correct. Right? IRB is not going to double check on that. But they will double check through tax audits. They audit, and if everything is okay, you're cleared. If everything is not good, then you issue an assessment, and you get the additional tax bill plus a special bonus on top of it. It's called penalty on that. So that's a self-assessment, because the onus is on the taxpayers to declare their taxes right. So now we've gone to the next era, and very interesting. If I have a crystal ball and I look at that now, we are at this juncture. We have e-invoicing that's coming in. So we are going on a mode called compliance by design or cooperative compliance, where every time you do certain things, your tax will be computed automatically already. And that's how e-invoice eventually will become, because if you look at it, I give a very simple example. I go to the bookshop, I buy a book, the company will issue me an e-invoice. The e-invoice goes to the RB system. RB says, hey, now Farah, you bought 550 ringgit worth of books. That 550 ringgit will be given as a tax deduction to you. So when I go and prepare my tax returns, and this is how the feature is going to look like, I don't even need to pull out those invoices. I look at my tax returns in the system, the 550 is already in there, automatically deducted. Same goes if I receive a salary, or if I sell I'm in a trading of I'm a SME. I trading of cosmetics, say for example, mm-hmm. right? I sell to you, and you then issue an invoice to me. Automatically, that will be my income, and that income is the income that I'm supposed to be taxed on. Mm. So naturally, all this will be systemized. It's all digitalized, and all is contained within the system. I don't have to do anything. My tax is already computed as and when I transact, and that's what is called real time, real time calculation of your tax, because the government would know exactly how much income I make from my business and how much deductions I can get if I'm an individual or if I'm in business, because it's all in real-time invoice that is going to be produced. So no more calculating, no more submission, all is done at real-time.
There's also a bane of how we capture companies that do not need to pay business tax or income tax if they earn below a certain threshold, if I'm not missing, $250,000 a year or something like that. And the question is, why are we not even capturing the data? Why are we just taking the word for it, right? But mm-hmm. with the e-invoice, mm-hmm. at least we know, even though the tax liability is zero,
yes.
their transactions are still being captured,
on exactly.
and we still know how much the exactly. IRB needs to make, exactly. assuming we lower the threshold of exactly. of the minimum amount of revenue that they make.
Yeah. So if I'm in business, I buy an asset, and you are selling me a machine, and you say, I cannot issue an e-invoice. Mm. I won't want to buy from you because yeah. I want to claim a tax deduction yeah. on that machine,
yeah.
right? For example, I mean, yeah. just give you an example.
Yeah,
so I'll go and buy from Mr. X here because he will issue an e-invoice to me, mm. so you lose the business. Mm. So by hook or by crook, you would still need to get into the system and issue an invoice to me. And
right.
your income would naturally then be, in a way, declared because you're issuing an invoice to me, it's my expense and it's your income.
Final comments before conclude our conversation?
Well, I do hope then that with all this uncertainty that's facing the economy, geopolitical tension, rising cost of living, not just in Malaysia. Yeah, I mean, the rising cost of living, expensive things, not just in Malaysia. You go anywhere in the world, everything is just so expensive. And that one, I'm observing it. And with that, I do hope that Budget 2024 will cover some of these important aspects, covering some of those and supportive of some of those sectors that we would like to be the catalyst change to the country, as well as support to the people in the form of probably, I believe in a long-term investment. I believe in that we need to give opportunity for our people, for rakyat, to have the right skill and reskilling of our workforce that would fit the industry. So some of those measures to encourage reskilling, upskilling of our workforce, I think that would be most welcome because industries' needs have changed, requirements in different sectors and different businesses have changed, right? If we have robots now, assuming the role of a person, what can we do that with that person because he still needs to have a salary and income to
or
sustain
means
his
to
living,
earn.
Means to earn. So what are the things that can be given to the people so that they can continue to contribute back to the nation by having the right skills?
Busy time that we have right now, but thank you very much. That was Farah Rosli, the Malaysia Tax Leader of EY. There's plenty of conversations like this that can be found on astroawani.com. Also, stay tuned to astroawani.com for the live presentation that will take place at the Parliament this Friday, the 13th. At 4 p.m. Only on Astro Awani. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.